Hey everybody, welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast. I'm Robert Hookman Jr. and this episode is Jenny Irish reading her short story, Glass, live at Spillers No. 6 on December 13th, 2016. Here's Brian with the introduction.
She is the assistant director for the creative writing program at... Sounds like you might know this person. She has a very long list of publishing credits, places like Alaska Quarterly Review, Colorado Review, the Georgia Review, and those are just the ones that are named after states. She also has a forthcoming piece in Plowshares, really competitive place to get into. She also has a forthcoming collection of prose poems. It is entitled Common Ancestors. It is available for pre-order right now through the publisher's website. The publisher is Black Lawrence Press, and she is here tonight to read her short story, Glass. Everyone, please welcome Jenny Irish.
I'm really glad to be here tonight with all of you. Call it a mystery of my dime thin heart, this fantasy that has nothing to do with sexual tenderness or the elevation of my person, physical, metaphysical, or otherwise. What I want is to see the full moon glass shop burn. Here's what they do in this fine little neighborhood where I'm living as a garden shed renter, surrounded by mock Tudor mansions 100 years gentrified. The full moon glass shop teaches. It happens in the back. Classes offered out of sight, stippling, stumping, flashing, and fusing, whatever those things might be. At the front, through bell-strung double doors, the full moon is an art gallery and jeweler without, and I'm only being honest, anything resembling art or jewels. Curio cases and bookshelves and tables draped with velvet runners display earrings and keychains and other assorted school art fair type junk, all of it crafted from streaky glass. Hung from the walls are would-be bowls with lettuce ruffled rims, and propped on the shelves are panes of framed stained glass, meant to be placed into a pre-existing window to throw colored light through the pieced together image of what might be an angel or a fish. At the full moon, these aren't such different creatures. I walk around this place I live, like I've been released into a maze. I pass lovely houses, choked with mullioned windows and herringbone brick, turn sharply at stone corners, and come to dead ends at wooden fences chewed through by the force of a garden's growth. There's one house completely surrounded by a hedge of pink bleeding hearts. They've forgotten that they're only flowers. There comes a point, though, where under the weight of 1,000 heart-shaped petals, that the stalks fold over and the flowers spill onto the sidewalk. The wind blows them through the streets. It's like magic, something so pink behaving itself so badly. Someone was led through the desert by a cloud of dust. When I was small, I had a picture Bible. My mother wasn't the type, and I consider it safe to assume my father wasn't either, but I had a grandmother who was an aggressive believer. She'd be disappointed to learn that all that I've retained are the pictures and the stories that I made up to go with them. Faith of the kind she hoped to instill in me is something I know nothing real about, neither its practice nor its history. I say Jesus Christ when I stub a toe. I am reminded, though, watching the bleeding hearts turn cartwheels alongside cars, of that Simon Says-y dust cloud. Follow me. Once, I was threatened with no ice cream for a summer after bringing home a report card with a handwritten note that read, "It's time to listen. Where does she go?" On the sidewalk in front of the full moon, students gather. I can hear them from down the street. At the right or wrong, it's really a matter of perception. Time of day, I'm practically wading through them. I slow, motivated by the same ugly fascination that causes passersby to pull alongside wrecks and offer their assistance, even as the firemen are trying to block off the traffic with orange cones. I listen. One student will lift a hand. A piece of mine is in the window. Another will respond, "Oh, that? No," says the first. "The napkin rings." "Ah, ah," the students say to one another. a complete summation of value. But having just breathed that soft condemnation never stops any single one of them from pointing to their own, my hands did this monstrosity, and saying, well, that's my piece. Arms swinging like they're divining rods and embarrassments or water, pointing out lumped objects through the window. It's the longtime students who say my favorite thing, who after a series of mine, 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 punch things up with, also my work. I am a witness. This is what the idle do. They aren't happy either. My best friend had her first mental break when she was 22. Later, I learned this is common in girls. They take their first tour around the bend in their late teens or early 20s, then make frequent trips for the rest of their lives thereafter. When it happened, I didn't realize. I honestly thought she was scheming, and I was annoyed. In college, she'd studied theater. When she announced plans to major in drama, my mother said, well, that's perfect, isn't it? Affectionately, her own mother called her Peter, after the boy who cried wolf. Like a million other girls, she believed in herself and in her dreams. If not Broadway, then off-Broadway, until Broadway. If not off-Broadway, then a sitcom to start. If not a sitcom, then a soap opera. If not a soap opera, then commercials. If not that, then at the very least a dating show, just to get her name out, just to get a foot in the door. But after college, our lives were at this point. In the grocery store, in the town where we grew up and had returned to, when we put our bulk food bag of almonds on the scale, we typed in the code for peanuts to save ourselves a few bucks. At night, my best friend served plates of eggs in a restaurant that had breakfast 24 hours a day. I interrupted alumni's dinners and marital congress with requests for a donation of $100, sir, $75, sir, with just $50, sir, sir, you're 25. In the mornings, we were sad, drinking coffee, watching the soap operas our mothers had watched when we were little girls. My mother, during rape scenes, said, turn your head. My best friend's mother said, ceiling eyes, whenever an actress came on screen wearing a silky robe. My best friend wanted me to feel her heart. Is it still beating? I told her, life is not an episode. Breakfast isn't an audition. Curled on her side in bed, knees to her chest, she said, I can't get up. Everything is shaking. I thought what she needed was a good shake, and I told her so. When she stopped bathing and stayed in bed all day, humming into her knuckles, I believe she was imagining herself shipped away to a place with lounge chairs on a sun-splattered balcony, where an attentive staff would deliver fresh berries and bottled water, and at twilight hand out gold and silver sparklers, encouraging those under their care to run wild across the soft lawn as the sun set. The thing was, I wanted to go to that place too. I'm sure it happens, the occasional desperate husband, boyfriend, or lover, having been careless with fidelity, feelings, or his calendaring, he flies into the full moon and he makes a purchase. They do have location. There isn't anything else nearby but a bakery and a mini branch of the post office, so I'm sure the full moon turns some business that way, off the fruits of human negligence. But the bulk of their income, I've seen it. Are these people so eager to express? The students gathered on the sidewalk, waiting for their classes, wanting so badly to produce. And produce they do. Then, when their misshapen creations are cooled to solid, they're spread through the full moon's front room, price tagged like the one-of-a-kind treasures they're just not. Before my life changed, I spent a year teaching preschool. 11 through 4-year-olds, and three of them were named Jaden. Every mother, though, had read a different book of baby names because each shared with me a meaning unique to their child. They had God in common, but that was all. During the first week, this helped me decide how I would say Jaden versus Jaden versus Jaden, and soon it didn't matter they were in triplicate because one was named for God's will, another for God's breath, another for his judgment. Growing up, I lived in a house in the woods. My backyard had no end. Rather than a sandbox, I played in the foundation of a burned-out house. What was left after fire, abandonment, and time was the smell of October, regardless of the season, and a deep square hole with rough red dust spread across its bottom. Once it had been a house of bricks. I was on my knees, pushing handprints into the dust, then bowing low to blow them away. Beside me, something shivered like leaves when they're moved by wind, but the hole was empty except for me and the dust. At the time I was reading Wuthering Heights, I didn't go back to the remains of the house, but every night, even in winter, I kept my bedroom window partway open. When my best friend died, we weren't friends anymore. What happens when two people love one another, then stop loving one another, happened to us. I hated her. Had she been in her right mind, she would have hated me too. She was in her mother's care, the television on low, and tender baby talk and bursts of anger. I was there for lunch. Her mother opened a can of soup and poured it cold into a toddler's sippy cup. She saw my expression before I could school it. "If you think you can do better," she said, "go ahead, step right up." When I left, I was thinking of that photo of dead Marilyn Monroe, where her face is unrecognizable, bloated and discolored. For days, it was there every time I blinked. The hardest thing that you can ask a four-year-old to do is cut a traced pony from its paper. It's the legs, the curves of the muscle, and those little kicky wings of hair at the ankles. It's too much to ask, really, but I never did it to be cruel. Expectations should be met like walls. Sometimes you can go up and over, and sometimes you can bust right through. But the rest of the time, which is most of the time, you have to hit them full force, head on. The first time a leg rips off, there may be tears, but the thing is, there's another sheet of paper, another pony, another chance. And when a leg comes off again, there's still another sheet of paper, another pony, another chance to try. Chances are they'll fail. They'll never get the legs out. It'll just be sheet after sheet into the recycle bin or put through the shredder for confetti. But after the third or fourth time, the kids don't cry, and they don't expect it to work. Some days my class had no projects to take home. Some days all we did was try. The day when we were making leis out of paper beads and construction paper flowers, there was a volunteer mother in class. She wet her daughter's yarn in her mouth before she fed the beads onto it. While the rest of the children cut rough, three-petaled flowers, the mother twisted tissue paper to make pistils and stamens for hibiscuses. Did her daughter have the best lei? Yes. Or no, it's a matter of perspective. My first stepfather was a dentist. With him, my mother believed she would finally live in the style she'd always deserved. Initially, her pleasure was so great, such a delightful novelty, that I devoted myself to loving my stepfather. He did the same. He said he hoped we would be friends and was ever ready with a non-intrusive one-armed hug. It was nice, but I'll be honest again and admit that we, my stepfather and I, in the years following, continued to show affection for one another for the same reason that you wind a wire around a battery in science class, to make it spark. We loved in anticipation of reaction and award. In the beginning, my stepfather longed to please my mother. Later, he attempted to maintain her happiness because it made his own life easier. And while I ceased to care about my mother's level of satisfaction, I hoped my stepfather would continue to buy me things. Post-divorce, there was a new boyfriend who my mother called Rugged. In a syrup voice that suggested rugged was not exactly or all that she meant. He announced one night that he was taking us out. Still coming down from life with the dentist, to me that meant fancy. After I dressed, I went to the boyfriend for his approval. Meaning, am I presentable? I asked. Is my outfit okay? Do you like it? He said, I like what's under it. In my second year of teaching, I quit before I was fired. There was a parental complaint. The mother of a little boy said since entering my class, all her son's progress had stopped completely. What do you become when your best friend of a lifetime stops being your best friend, then dies? I don't know what you become, but But for a day, I was the woman who, meeting an old high school classmate on the street, leaned close to whisper, "You know, she never was quite right. I'd like to see it all go up. I don't know how high a fire must burn to melt glass, but I imagine it's hell hot. The firemen would have to stand across the street. The whole sky would bend with heat. In the end, there would be nothing left but a lesson. It's no good. Try again."
That was Jenny Irish reading her short story Glass at Spillers No. 6 at Crescent Ballroom on December 13th, 2016. For more Spillers After Show podcast episodes, please go to spillersaftershow.com. For more information on Spillers, Phoenix, Arizona's premier short fiction storytelling event, go to spillers.net.